This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and thank you so much for joining me today on Target. As you know, we're here every week, and we try to talk about subjects that we think are important and interesting and educational and topical for all of us who live here in the Western New York community. There's probably no more topical subject than the opiate addiction and the crisis that we as a nation have been facing for several years regarding this. And I always want to take an opportunity when I have it to meet and talk to people who are trying to address this issue in one way or another, whether it be through medical means, whether it be through public relations, whether it be counseling. There's, you know, many, many aspects to the issue and to treating the problem. So recently, I am pleased and honored to say that I'm on the opiate task force for Erie County. And recently, we have meetings with all the different agencies and groups that are involved in trying to meet this problem or this crisis. And one of the speakers was, I thought, so important and had so many interesting facts and was involved with such an interesting program that I asked him if he would come to On Target and address it and talk to us about it. And so he is graciously here, Dr. Joshua Lynch. And Dr. Lynch is an emergency physician for UBMD emergency physicians, emergency medicine, it's called. And he is involved with not only this issue, but of course other issues as well. But a program that I think he's going to describe to us has been making a difference, really a landmark program that is making a difference here in Western New York anyway, if not a prototype probably for the whole country. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Lynch.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
I made that up about. Well, first of all, just let me go back and give your credentials in a better way to my listeners by asking you what your background is.
I grew up here in Western New York and trained in emergency medicine at UB and the its associated hospitals, Kaleida, ECMC, the VA, Children's, and now work for UBMD Emergency Medicine, primarily at the Kaleida Hospitals and ECMC, and also do some work as a medical director for Mercy Flight, and over the last few years have found myself very involved in working to try to combat the opioid addiction crisis, and not only in Western New York, but really across New York State and more and more kind of across the country.
You know, when I said that emergency medicine, I was thinking that more or less it involves the, what do you call it, when you come to the emergency room. I mean, it would be not just opiate addiction or drug addiction, but a lot of other issues, and people end up in the emergency room.
Right, right. So, you know, we are kind of the front lines of medicine along with the primary care providers, you know, our counterparts that work out in the offices, out in the community. And we really are the ones that kind of confront illness and injury really as it comes in. There aren't necessarily, we're not really handed a schedule for the day. So we really kind of need to be ready to not only handle things medically, but also what are we going to do when they're ready to leave the emergency department? And we're very well equipped to handle patients that come in with a traumatic injury and they go to the operating room. Patients that come in with chest pain either get discharged to follow up with their cardiologist or their primary doctor, or they go into the hospital and go get a procedure done or a stress test. And really kind of the what sparked some of this is we realized that, you know, we can take care of patients that come in with addictions problems in the emergency room. We can resuscitate them if they've overdosed, or we can help to try to treat their withdrawal in the emergency department. But we realized that we didn't really have much to offer them when they left. And if we kept them in the hospital, you know, things would go fairly well, I think, in the hospital. But when they're ready to walk out the door, we didn't really have much to offer them like we did all these other chronic disease processes.
Like if somebody came in with an asthma attack or I can't think of something that would be like said chronic, would know what to
right,
do.
Or diabetes. If their diabetes is out of control, we admit them to the hospital, get under control. If it's, you know, just a little bit worse today, then we, you know, stabilize them and then send them back to their primary doctor or their endocrinologist. And we we realized that a lot of us had been frustrated that, like, wow, we don't really have like the same rock solid follow up like we should for patients with addiction problems.
So then what did happen? How did it develop?
Well, so this this is really, I think, an example of unprecedented collaboration that's happened across the medical community. And Western New York is known for, you know, working together and kind of all chipping in and helping out for many, many things, medical and not medical. We realized that, you know, we needed to get these patients treated in the most efficient manner in the emergency department, and working with a group like UBMD Emergency Medicine, and that has research component and evidence-based practice and all kinds of people working to make sure that the care that we deliver is cutting edge, is scientifically backed, and evidence-based. So that part wasn't that challenging to figure out what we needed to do right in the hospital, but engaging the addictions clinics that we're thankful and fortunate to have a lot of them around Western New York, engaging them to get together and kind of come together with a common set of values, and having them be willing to take some of our patients in a pretty quick manner after they leave the hospital was really kind of the bigger job. And working with the Erie County Opioid Task Force and the Health Commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein, and all the agencies that are represented there, from police departments to counselors to addictions clinics to the hospitals to the EMS services to all over the spectrum, really kind of spark the idea of, you know, let's just get everybody together and try to create a network just like we would of primary care providers or cardiologists or any other specialty that that we know that practices kind of along the same principles as a group like UBMD does. They're providing evidence-based care, they're fair, and they can get patients in a fairly, you know, timely manner. So we engaged clinics, and now we have 27 different office locations that participate that are willing to take our patients, you know, within a couple days of leaving the hospital. And I think most importantly is that all of these clinics have agreed to provide, you know, excellent care, have agreed to really kind of accept the patients with all of their comorbidities or complexities that they bring with into the clinics. And we've, you know, been thankful to have such a great partnership with all of these organizations, too many to list, that now there is a place for the patients to go when they leave the hospital in a timely manner.
Now, there was a couple of steps also with the treatment and the emergency room issue and the opiate addiction issue. Originally, I guess there was a lot of, opposition to treating people from overdoses with medicine and continuing to treat them with medicine.
Right.
So that's something I think you've overcome, and you've worked and you've educated others about.
Yeah. So there was actually a law that said that you can't treat opiate addiction with opioids. And that's part of the premise of, or the foundation of, the additional extra training that you might have heard that physicians and PAs and nurse practitioners have to take to be able to prescribe Suboxone or buprenorphine, which is one of the only evidence-based and scientifically proven ways to reduce, increase treatment compliance over the long term. So, getting physicians and PAs and nurse practitioners to give up, invest another 8 to 24 hours of additional time, oftentimes on their own, to be able to get the certification to prescribe the medicine isn't necessarily easy. So giving credit to some of the folks at the University of Buffalo and our chairman, Dr. Rob McCormack, who really kind of led the charge to rally all roughly 120 of the ER providers, docs, PAs that work for our group, and encourage them to go through, get the certification, so we can provide, you know, this level of care right in the emergency department, which now we've been doing for about a year.
Explain what would happen before in the emergency room. What kind of treatment a person would get that was suffering from an overdose?
Thankfully, ECMC has had drug and alcohol counselors positioned right in the emergency department for a long time. And they have really taught us a lot about how what we need to do right in the emergency department. However, they're unique in offering that service. Most of the other hospitals don't have the opportunity to have drug and alcohol counselors right in the emergency department. So what we used to do was really try to give them some medications in the ER, get them feeling better, and give them a list of phone numbers to call when they got home. Now, we know how well that probably worked.
The compliance right. was probably 1% yeah. or less.
So imagine getting home. Imagine having the courage to come to the ER and want help, which is hard for these patients to do. And we give them a lot of credit when they are able to do that. But we send them home with a list of phone numbers, and maybe some of the numbers didn't work, or they called and they were offered an appointment 6 weeks out. The likelihood that they're going to keep trying it, you know, is very low. And the opiate addiction is such a strong disease that if you're willing to try for a day or 2 days and you're not getting anywhere, the likelihood you're going to keep trying is very low.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang, and we have in the studio with us Dr. Joshua Lynch, who is an emergency physician with UBMD Emergency Medicine, and we are discussing a new program, really, that the doctor was involved with for continuing treatment, I guess we would say, of people who are suffering from opiate addiction. Now, why is it, what's unique or different about opiate addiction from any other addiction that person might come to the emergency room for treatment for?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's an acute life-threatening disease, really. So other addictions certainly can kill you, but opiate addiction can kill you much quicker. And unfortunately, you know, we've seen people overdose and not be revived, even using one or two times even. So it really goes across the whole entire spectrum of people that have been using for years and years and years. It just takes one time for them, you know, for them to die. So the urgency to try to help this problem, it really needs to be there. And I think we thankfully, you know, with cooperation from the university and from a whole other different groups that have shared kind of in that idea that, wow, you know, we really need to do something. This program that we're able to refer patients into a whole bunch of treatment slots at a whole bunch of different clinics was really able to grow. And thankfully to the Oshai Foundation for providing us with a grant in conjunction with Erie County Health Department to be able to grow this program to the point that it is today with over 60 appointment slots a week. Or across 27 different clinics, and the patient gets to choose where they go. I mean, really, we wouldn't be able to do that without the collaboration of all the people that I've mentioned before, but, you know, importantly with the support of the Oshai Foundation. And just last week, there was an article in the New York Times that kind of highlighted a story about some ERs that were starting to treat opiate addiction in the ER, and the title or the first couple lines included the fact that that's very rare that this is happening, and a lot of us kind of took note to that and said, you know, well, it's actually not very rare, especially in Buffalo. You can go to pretty much any hospital in the greater Buffalo area and have access to this network, and I think this network is one of the most robust treatment networks in the country, and you know, it shows that other people are taking note too, like the New York State Health Department and the Colorado State Health Department in New York City, asking kind of like, how did you do this? And it's as complex as it sounds, it's really about building relationships. And that's what's great about Buffalo is the clinics have stepped forward, the Erie County Health Department stepped forward, UB has stepped forward, Kaleida, the Oshai Foundation offering to help, and kind of identifying those groups in the community, which we have a ton of. It was really how it happened.
It's very impressive when you go to the Opiate Task Force meetings, as I have to see, and you mentioned just a few, which I had totally forgotten, of the different groups that are involved, the law enforcement groups,
the counselors, the addiction clinics, mm-hmm. the families
definitely
that have lost
loved
ones, teach us a lot and teach us every single day where we need to stay focused, and they kind of reality check us to make sure that things that we're working on developing at the task force in collaboration with all these other different groups make sense to people who have gone through it before.
Now, I wanted to talk medically a little bit, since I have a doctor locked up in the studio here and the door closed, about the effect, what happens, because we keep reading how serious and how, like you just said, a person could actually die from, like, just using the opiates two times, not just forever, or not just for years or whatever. What's different about the opiates than there is, I'm trying to think, heroin or another...
Fentanyl. So what we're seeing lately is the potency of the opioids that are out there is much, much higher. The potency of injecting fentanyl, it doesn't take very much to have a fatal dose. So what happens when you take an opioid is that your respiratory rate goes down and your drive to breathe goes down. So typically that's what happens, is patients stop breathing. And now you might be thinking to yourself, well, they use fentanyl in the hospital. In a very controlled environment. It's actually a very good pain medicine when used appropriately by someone who knows what they're doing.
I wanted to talk about what they were explaining about how it affects the brain, how the serious effect that it has on the brain, which many people are not aware of the danger.
Right. So I think the biggest problem is that that dependency happens so quickly. So the body becomes physically dependent on having opioid in its system. So when that's important, because when you don't have it in your system, you go through such an unpleasant withdrawal that you psychologically want more, even though you know it's not good, but you physically need it to function. So, oftentimes the patients that we care for in the hospital and in the doctor's office and the addictions clinic are literally physically dependent on the medication, and they can barely function without it. So the patients that we see mostly now are patients that their life is nearly consumed by trying to stay out of withdrawal. So their job suffers, their family suffer, their every aspect of their life in its entirety, really, except for using the drug, goes away and becomes less important, or I guess less of a priority, even though deep down they value those things and they want those things to foster and flourish. They just can't, because their body and their mind are so just consumed in not being in withdrawal and just functioning.
And we keep hearing about the fact that a lot of people become addicted due to prescription, legally prescribed drugs that they need for pain after an accident, right, or back injury or, something like that. And I don't know, what is that true, and what did you find, and what can be done about that?
It is, and this has brought to light the need for education at at the medical school level, and not only just medical school, but dental school, chiropractic school, nursing school, physical therapy, really all the disciplines of healthcare. We've realized that we haven't done a great job at educating the future of medicine, how to responsibly treat pain and how to responsibly prescribe opioids, and also when and how to responsibly prescribe pain medication that's not opioids. And the University of Buffalo has taken a great stance on this with multi-disciplines that are starting to incorporate appropriate use of pain medication and non-opiate pain medication and how to treat pain into their curriculums to stay ahead of this. So the graduates that they're putting out are responsibly trained practitioners.
But there is the other side to this, which you hear people say now. You're nodding, so you know what I'm going to say. A friend of mine, for a very good example, had a car accident, and her back and her spine or some her shoulder, I mean, whatever. She was in terror and pain. And she was only able to get, I want to say, not Tylenol or something like that.
Right?
Yeah, something like that. And whereas I think a few years ago, she most definitely would have been prescribed
like hydrocodone or something.
Yes.
You know, I think there are some clinicians that have gone that they've allowed the pendulum to swing in all the way to the other direction. So patients will occasionally come into the emergency department, see someone like myself or one of my colleagues, and there we often hear that, well, my doctor doesn't prescribe pain medication, period. So, you know, I don't necessarily know if that's really the solution either. It takes a little extra work and a little extra time to explain, to say, hey, listen, we're going to prescribe you a small quantity of hydrocodone, a very small quantity of muscle relaxants, but we're also going to prescribe you naproxen or an anti-inflammatory medication. And here's what we want you to do. We want you to take this medicine most of the time. And if your pain is, you know, uncontrolled or intolerable, then take one of the opioid pain medications. But gone are the days, really, that we should be prescribing quantities of 90 or 180, even sometimes, hydrocodone tablets, and just letting the patient go on their own with that big bottle to figure it out for themselves. So other techniques that are being used is we'll give, you know, 5 days of a narcotic pain medication. And if you're still in that much pain and you need more, then you need to come back so we can see you and kind of decide what the most appropriate like pain management regimen would be for you.
I needed to go back to something that we talked about originally, and it was that there was a great hesitation, or I'm trying to think of opposition to treating people with Narcan, with not just Narcan, but I can't think of the others that they use for treatment now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the education had to take place to show that this was really the only way to treat people who are addicted, to get them Suboxone.
Right,
that. Yeah.
You know, so Suboxone is part of a treatment strategy called medication-assisted treatment, or MAT, and that also includes medications like Vivitrol or Naltrexone or Methadone. And the evidence has shown that using those types of medications in conjunction with counseling, counseling either group or individual or a combination of both, is really the key. And medication, a friend of mine, Dr. Paul Updike, who we work with closely, who works in addiction medicine, he puts it very well. The medication does the heavy lifting of working on addressing the problem, and the counseling and coming to the office and being responsible and being accountable, it kind of takes care of the rest. So really using the two tools together, I think is what really needs to be done and what really has been shown to be successful. Now, getting patients linked to programs that provide both was really kind of the premise of what we worked together with UBMD and with the OSHI Foundation and the Health Department to try to get patients access to that type of treatment that we know that works.
That was the challenge.
Right.
And also you hear people say all the time, I can't believe that somebody would be treated with Narcan three times in one day, three times in a week, three times in 10 times in a month.
Right.
How can we do that? How can you do that?
Yeah,
do you do that?
It's actually very easy. I mean, one, it's the right thing to do. And two, this opioid addiction is a chronic relapsing disease. It's a chronic disease. So the easiest way to relate is to look at the patient with diabetes. And when they come in and they have eaten cake or eaten too much or their blood sugars are out of control, we don't stop giving them insulin. We continue to treat them and we work through them and kind of hold their hand.
You
and
say, you shouldn't have had that cake. Too bad.
Right. I mean, sure, of course. Do we say
that?
What are
you doing eating that candy?
Yeah.
Out.
We say that. I mean, we oftentimes joke with patients and say like, hey, listen, you gotta relax, like you gotta cut down a little, be careful. But we say the same thing to patients with an opioid problem is, listen, we understand that relapse and making a bad decision is part of the disease. We get it. We're here for you. We'll treat you. You know, be very, you know, be careful next time. But we as healthcare professionals owe it to our patients to take care of them, whether their disease is a one-time cure or something that we need to work with them for a long period of time for.
You mentioned the relapse issue. I was going to say to you, I learned from my opiate task force meetings that it's such a insipid, so hangs on so much, this addiction and disease, that you can expect, I think, I heard seven, even maybe possibly seven times that a person is going to relapse until they actually can get this out of their system and
right,
can be
right.
rehabilitated.
Right. I mean, just look at any chronic disease. I mean, patients come in with out of control blood pressure all the time. How many, we all know somebody who's tried to quit smoking, right? And they've tried many times, and we don't give up on them. So, you know, I think that this should really be viewed no differently than any of those things that we just talked about.
Right. And the public, the awareness of the public is, I know you've been working on you and everybody in the task force and all other groups, the eliminating the stigma and making people realize that, you know, this is an addiction and it's medical and it has to be treated.
Right, right. You know, we've heard over and over and seen in the news that this problem doesn't discriminate based on where you live or how much money you make or what color you are or whatever, really. And I think that realizing that people from all walks of life struggle with this, whether they are professionals or whether they're homeless or whether they're a blue collar factory worker or an office worker or an attorney, I have seen all of them many times, and they all struggle the same exact ways, and they really all deserve the best treatment that we can give.
Well, we're really, really excited to learn about the success of this program and that it's being it's so successful that other places, other areas of the country even, are using it for an example. So we thank you so much, Dr. Joshua Lynch, for being with us today. And thanks for listening, everybody. We hope maybe we've helped somebody in giving them some information that they didn't have before. Please join us again next week for On Target. Have a good week, and goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.